Chapter 95. The Pequod meets the Virgin. The predestinated day arrived, and we duly met the ship Jungfrut, Derek the Deer, master of Bremen. At one time the greatest whaling people in the world, the Dutch and Germans are now among the least, but here and there at very wide intervals of latitude and longitude, you still occasionally meet with their flag in the Pacific. For some reason, the Jungfrau seemed quite eager to pay her respects. While yet some distance from the Pequod, she rounded to, and dropping a boat, her captain was impelled towards us, impatiently standing in the bows instead of the stern. "What is he in his hand there?" cried Starbuck, pointing to something wavingly held by the German. "Impossible. A lamp feeder." "Not that," said Stubb. "No, no, it's a coffee pot, Mr. Starbuck. He's coming off to make us our coffee, is the Yarman. Don't you see that big tin can there alongside of him? That's his boiling water." "Oh, he's all right, is the Yarman." "Go along with you," cried Flask. "It's a lamp feeder and an oil can. He's out of oil, and has come a-begging." However curious it may seem for an oil ship to be borrowing oil on the whale ground, and however much it may inadvertently contradict the old proverb about carrying coals to Newcastle, yet sometimes such a thing really happens, and in the present case Captain Derek the Deer did indubitably conduct a lamp feeder as Flask did declare. As he mounted the deck, Ahab abruptly accosted him, without at all heeding what he had in his hand. But in his broken lingo, the German soon evinced his complete ignorance of the white whale, immediately turning the conversation to his lamp feeder and oil can, with some remarks touching his having to turn into his hammock at night in profound darkness, his last drop of Bremen oil being gone, and not a single flying fish yet captured to supply the deficiency, concluding by hinting that his ship was indeed what in the fishery is technically called a clean one, that is, an empty one, well deserving the name of Jungfrau the Virgin. His necessities supplied, Derek departed. But he had not gained his ship's side, when whales were almost simultaneously raised from the mastheads of both vessels, and so eager for the chase was Derek, that without pausing to put his oil can and lamp feeder aboard, he slewed round his boat and made after the Leviathan lamp feeders. Now, the game having risen to leeward, he and the other three German boats that soon followed him had considerably the start of the Pequod's keels. There were eight whales, an average pod. Aware of their danger, they were going all abreast with great speed straight before the wind, rubbing their flanks as closely as so many spans of horses in harness. They left a great wide wake, as though continually unrolling a great wide parchment upon the sea. Full in this rapid wake, and many fathoms in the rear, swam a huge, humped old bull, which by his comparatively slow progress, as well as by the unusual yellowish incrustations overgrowing him, seemed afflicted with the jaundice, or some other infirmity. Whether this whale belonged to the pod in advance, seemed questionable, for it is not customary for such venerable leviathans to be at all social. Nevertheless, he stuck to their wake, though indeed their backwater must have retarded him, because the white boner swell at his broad muzzle was a dashed one, like the swell formed when two hostile currents meet. His spout was short, slow, and laborious, coming forth with a choking sort of gush, and spending itself in torn shreds, followed by strange subterranean commotions in him, which seemed to have egress at his other buried extremity, causing the waters behind him to upbubble. "Who's got some paregoric?" said Stubb. "He has the stomach ache, I'm afraid. Lord, think of having half an acre of stomach ache. Adverse winds are holding mad Christmas in him, boys. It's the first foul wind I ever knew to blow from astern. But look, did ever whale yaw so before? It must be, he's lost his tiller." As an overladen Indiaman bearing down the Hindustan coast with a deckload of frightened horses, careens, berries, rolls, and wallows on her way, So did this old whale heave his aged bulk, and now and then partly turning over on his cumbrous rib ends, expose the cause of his devious wake in the unnatural stump of his starboard fin. Whether he had lost that fin in battle, or had been born without it, it were hard to say. Only wait a bit, old chap, and I'll give ye a sling for that wounded arm, cried Cruel Flask, pointing to the whale line near him. Mind ye don't sling thee with it, cried Starbuck. I've way, or the German will have him. With one int and all the combined rival boats were pointed for this one fish, because not only was he the largest, and therefore the most valuable whale, but he was nearest to them, and the other whales were going with such great velocity, moreover, as almost to defy pursuit for the time. At this juncture the Pequod's keels had shot by the three German boats last lowered, but from the great start he had had, Derrick's boat still led the chase, though every moment neared by his foreign rivals. The only thing they feared was that from being already so nigh to his mark, he would be enabled to dart his iron before they could completely overtake and pass him. As for Derrick, he seemed quite confident that this would be the case, and occasionally with a deriding gesture shook his lamp feeder at the other boats. The ungracious and ungrateful dog, cried Starbuck. He mocks and dares me with the very poor box I filled for him not 5 minutes ago. Then in his old intense whisper I've way, greyhounds. Dog to it. I tell ye what it is, man, cried Stubb to his crew, tease against my religion to get mad. But I'd like to eat that villainous yarman, Paul, won't ye? Are ye going to let that rascal beat ye? Do ye love brandy? A hogshead of brandy, then, to the best man. Come, why don't some of ye burst a blood vessel? Who's that been dropping an anchor overboard? We don't budge an inch, we're becalmed. Halloo, here's grass growing in the boat's bottom, and by the Lord, the mast there's budding. This won't do, boys. Look at that yarman. The short and long of it is, men, will ye spit fire or not? Oh, see the suds he makes, cried Flask, dancing up and down, had a hump, oh, do pile on the beef lays like a log. Oh, my lads, do spring slapjacks and quahogs for supper, you know, my lads, baked clams and muffins, oh, do, spring, he's a 100-barreler, don't lose him now, don't. See that yarman, oh, won't he pull for your duff, my lads, such a sog, such a sogger. Don't he love sperm? There goes $3,000, men. A bank. A whole bank. The Bank of England. Oh, do. What's that yarman about now? At this moment Derrick was in the act of pitching his lamp feeder at the advancing boats, and also his oil can, perhaps with the double view of retarding his rival's way, and at the same time economically accelerating his own by the momentary impetus of the backward toss. The unmannerly Dutch dogger, cried Stubb. Oh now, men, like 50,000 line of battleship loads of red-haired devils. What do you say, Tishtigo? Are you the man to snap your spine in 22 pieces for the honor of old Gayhead? What do you say? I say, pull like goddamn, cried the Indian. Fiercely, but evenly incited by the taunts of the German, the Pequod's three boats now began ranging almost abreast, and, so disposed, momentarily near them. In that fine, loose, chivalrous attitude of the headsman, when drawing near to his prey, the three mates stood up proudly, occasionally backing the after oarsman with an exhilarating cry of, there she slides, now. Hurrah for the white ash breeze! Down with the yarman! Sail over him! But so decided and original started Derrick had, that spite of all their gallantry, he would have proved the victor in this race, had not a righteous judgment descended upon him in a crab which caught the blade of his midship oarsman. While this clumsy lubber was striving to free his white ash, and while, in consequence, Derrick's boat was nigh to capsizing, and he thundering away at his men in a mighty rage, that was a good time for Starbuck, Stubb, and Flask. With a shout, they took a mortal start forwards, and slantingly ranged upon the German's quarter. An instant more, and all four boats were diagonally in the whale's immediate wake, while stretching from them, on both sides, was the foaming swell that he made. It was a terrific, most pitiable, and maddening sight. The whale was now going head out, and sending his spout before him in a continual tormented jet, while his one poor fin beat his side in an agony of fright. Now to this hand, now to that, he yawed in his faltering flight, and still at every billow that he broke, he spasmodically sank in the sea, or sideways rolled towards the sky his one beating fin. So have I seen a bird with clipped wing making affrighted broken circles in the air, vainly striving to escape the piratical hawks. But the bird has a voice, and with plaintive cries, will make known her fear. But the fear of this vast dumb brute of the sea was chained up and enchanted in him. He had no voice, save that choking respiration through his spiracle, and this made the sight of him unspeakably pitiable, while still, in his amazing bulk, portcullis jaw, and omnipotent tail, there was enough to apple the stoutest man who so pitied. Seeing now that, but a very few moments more would give the Pequod's boats the advantage, and rather than be thus foiled of his game, Derek chose to hazard what to him must have seemed a most unusually long dart, ere the last chance would forever escape. But no sooner did his harpooner stand up for the stroke, than all three tigers, Queequeg, Tishtego, Daggoo, instinctively sprang to their feet, and standing in a diagonal row, simultaneously pointed their barbs, and darted over the head of the German harpooner. Their three Nantucket irons entered the whale, blinding vapors of foam and white fire. The three boats, in the first fury of the whale's headlong rush, bumped the Germans aside with such force, that both Derek and his baffled harpooner were spilled out, and sailed over by the three flying keels. "Don't be afraid, my butter boxes," cried Stubb, casting a passing glance upon them as he shot by. "He'll be picked up presently, all right. I saw some sharks astern St. Bernard's docks, you know, relieve distressed travelers. Hurrah! This is the way to sail now. Every keel a sunbeam. Hurrah! Here we go like three tin kettles at the tail of a mad cougar. This puts me in mind of fastening to an elephant in a tilbury on a plane, makes the wheel dash spokes fly. Boys, when you fasten to him that way, and there's danger of being pitched out to when you strike a hill. Hurrah! This is the way a fellow feels when he's going to Davy Jones all a rush down an endless inclined plane. Hurrah! This whale carries the everlasting mail." But the monster's run was a brief one. Giving a sudden gasp, he tumultuously sounded. With a grating rush, the three lines flew round the loggerheads with such a force as to gouge deep grooves in them, while so fearful were the harpooners that this rapid sounding would soon exhaust the lines, that using all their dexterous might, they caught repeated smoking turns with the rope to hold on, till at last, owing to the perpendicular strain from the lead-lined chocks of the boats, whence the three ropes went straight down into the blue, the gunwales of the bows were almost even with the water, while the three sterns tilted high in the air. And the whale soon ceasing to sound, for some time they remained in that attitude, fearful of expending more line, though the position was a little ticklish. But though boats have been taken down and lost in this way, yet it is this holding on, as it is called, this hooking up by the sharp barbs of his live flesh from the back, this it is that often torments the leviathan in too soon rising again, to meet the sharp lance of his foes. Yet not to speak of the peril of the thing, it is to be doubted whether this course is always the best, for it is but reasonable to presume that the longer the stricken whale stays underwater, the more he is exhausted. Because, owing to the enormous surface of him in a full-grown sperm whale something less than 2,000 square feet, the pressure of the water is immense. We all know what an astonishing atmospheric weight we ourselves stand up under. Even here, above ground, in the air, how vast, then, the burden of a whale, bearing on his back a column of 200 fathoms of ocean. It must at least equal the weight of 50 atmospheres. One whaleman has estimated it at the weight of 20 line of battle ships, with all their guns, and stores, and men on board. As the three boats lay there on that gently rolling sea, gazing down into its eternal blue noon, and as not a single groan or cry of any sort, nay, not so much as a ripple or a bubble came up from its depths, what landsman would have thought that beneath all that silence and placidity, the utmost monster of the seas was writhing and wrenching in agony? Not 8 inches of perpendicular rope were visible at the bows. Seems it credible that by three such thin threads the great Leviathan was suspended like a big weight to an 8-day clock? Suspended? And to what? To three bits of board. Is this the creature of whom it was once so triumphantly said, "Canst thou fill his skin with barbed irons, or his head with fish spears? The sword of him that layeth at him cannot hold the spear, the dart, nor the habergeon. He esteemeth iron as straw, the arrow cannot make him flee, darts are counted as stubble, he laugheth at the shaking of a spear. This the creature? This he? Oh! That unfulfillments should follow the prophets. For with the strength of 1,000 thighs in his tail, Leviathan had run his head under the mountains of the sea, to hide him from the Pequod's fish spears. In that sloping afternoon sunlight, the shadows that the three boats sent down beneath the surface must have been long enough, and broad enough to shade half Xerxes' army. Who can tell how appalling to the wounded whale must have been such huge phantoms flitting over his head? Stand by, men! He stirs, cried Starbuck, as the three lines suddenly vibrated in the water, distinctly conducting upwards to them, as by magnetic wires, the life and death throbs of the whale, so that every oarsman felt them in his seat. The next moment, relieved in great part from the downward strain at the bows, the boats gave a sudden bounce upwards, as a small ice field will, when a dense herd of white bears are scared from it into the sea. Haul in! Haul in! Cried Starbuck again. He's rising. The lines, of which, hardly an instant before, not one hand's breadth could have been gained, were now in long quick coils flung back all dripping into the boats, and soon the whale broke water within 2 ships' lengths of the hunters. His motions plainly denoted his extreme exhaustion. In most land animals there are certain valves, or floodgates in many of their veins, whereby when wounded, the blood is in some degree at least instantly shut off in certain directions. Not so with the whale, one of whose peculiarities it is to have an entire non-valvular structure of the blood vessels, so that when pierced even by so small a point as a harpoon, a deadly drain is at once begun upon his whole arterial system, and when this is heightened by the extraordinary pressure of water at a great distance below the surface, his life may be said to pour from him in incessant streams. Yet so vast is the quantity of blood in him, and so distant and numerous its interior fountains, that he will keep thus bleeding and bleeding for a considerable period, even as in a drought a river will flow, whose source is in the well springs of far-off and undiscernible hills. Even now, when the boats pulled upon this whale, and perilously drew over his swaying flukes, and the lances were darted into him, they were followed by steady jets from the new-made wound, which kept continually playing, while the natural spout hole in his head was only at intervals, however rapid, sending its affrighted moisture into the air. From this last vent no blood yet came, because no vital part of him had thus far been struck. His life, as they significantly call it, was untouched. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.